This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And I'm so pleased to have in the studio with me the brilliant, Nina Turner, you are one of my absolute heroes. You are so good at everything you've done. Former state senator in Ohio. Now you are the president of our revolution.
Yeah.
And congratulations.
Thank you, Tom. It's so great to be back in studio with you.
Yeah,
the same way about you. It's mutual.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's real. So tell us about the state of our revolution right now, both the organization and the metaphor.
Right. Well, the state of our revolution is strong. God, I've always wanted to say that.
I love it.
Thank you for that. You know, just building upon what was already done, as many of your listeners and viewers know, that was born from Senator Sanders' 2016 campaign, where he stood up and told Americans that we need a people's revolution in this country, that people should rise up and make their demands and needs known about what it should be like in the what you want your politicians and what kind of world you want to live in. That's what our revolution is pushing for. Grassroots. We empower grassroots organizations all across this country. We have hundreds of affiliates. And we do believe in citizen leaders, that if you empower the grassroots, then they push the agenda where they are. So it is a beautiful model. We endorse progressive candidates, and we also stand up for progressive issues. So it's been great. So just really building on, I want to give a shout out to Jeff Weaver, the former president of our revolution, and all the work that he has done to get us to this point. And I'm looking forward to taking us to the next level.
That is great. That is great. Now, by the way, if any of you have specific questions for Nina Turner, feel free to give us a shout at 202-808-9925, and she can respond to your questions. She's with us for the half hour till the bottom of the hour. And then you got to run to a board meeting or something like that. You got work to do.
I got work to do. Oh. Yes, the revolution demands work.
A woman with things to do and places to go and people to see.
Yeah.
Conventional wisdom about politics is essentially that there's an outside game and an inside game. There's the people who basically like lobby with the politicians, and then there's the people who are the outside organizations, you know, the kind of progressive Democrats of America type of organizations.
Yes.
Although PD America actually does both. They try to work the inside and the outside game. With regard to our revolution as an organization, mm-hmm. What's your specific strategy?
I think you do absolutely need an inside and outside game, I should say. But right now, for example, a good example is our Summer of Progress, where our revolution is teaming up with other progressive organizations like DFA, like National Nurses United and others, to really push for a summer of progress. So this is not just about resistance, but it is how do we make progress? And we're basing that on the very progressive platform, as many would say, the most progressive platform the Democratic Party has had in its history, to push Democrats to sign on to legislation that is in the House of Representatives right now. So Medicare for All would be one of those examples that was introduced by Senator Conyers. Making sure that we are able to pay for it. There's a bill that has a funding mechanism. So those are the kinds of bills that we're pushing. We have about 8 of them. And so with these organizations, there are about 15 of them. There's going to be a petition that goes out, and we're going to deliver those petitions to the DNC on July 25th. So that is working within the system to use the bills and the legislations and the progressive platform that Democrats say that they believe in to push our Democrats to sign on this, to affirm that they are for the issues that move the American people forward. I would call that partly an inside game. On the outside, you know, we push for progressive candidates. We support candidates from the local level, Tom, not just people who are running for Congress, not just the person that's running for governor, but also that person that's running for the school board, because school board members matter too. Council members matter too. Mayors matter. Governors matter. And sometimes when you're inside the Beltway, you only give a thought to who's in the Congress and who's in the presidency. But it's all of these layers that we believe will make our democracy stronger. And it's having progressive candidates that are not just going to say that they're progressive on the issues, but when they get the people's power, they will act upon that power in ways that push America forward, one community, one state at a time.
That's important stuff. You said July 25th. Yeah. That's next week, isn't it?
It is.
As I recall.
I mean, we're pushing, yeah.
So if somebody watching or listening right now wants to help you with that effort, where do they go? What do they do?
Go to ourrevolution.com and they will be able to pull down the petition. So we really need them. And I just want to read off the Healthcare Act, Medicare for All, on Education, College for All Act. We know that Senator Sanders pushed that very heavily during his campaign that we should make an investment. And I know we say free college, but I want people to think of it as an investment. In the same way in this country, at some period of time, we decided that K-12 education was important and that it was something that our young people had to have. We need a paradigm shift in our country to say that pre-K to 16 is something worth investing in. So I really want people to see it as an investment in our
country. Only that, we know from the GI Bill, mm-hmm. for every dollar invested in college education,
yes.
over the next 30 years, America made $7 in additional tax revenue that they wouldn't have other, yes. we wouldn't have otherwise gotten, because people with a college degree had a higher income, and so they paid higher taxes.
That's right, Tom. And that point, I'm so glad you brought it up, because some people may look at it through the lens of economics, and other people may look at it through the lens of morality. You get to pick. Yeah. But it does help our country keep its competitive edge, because our young people are not just competing. Children who live in D.C. are not just competing against children who live in Ohio or in Nebraska. They're competing against children and young people from all over the world. And the 21st century demands people who have high skills or are highly educated through college or some technical skill, but they have to have a skill in the 21st century. And why wouldn't we want our country to have the competitive edge? So I do want people to see this as an investment, not a burden, but an investment. We have our women's rights bill. That's equal access to abortion coverage. That is important. That is a medical procedure. Yes, I said the A word. Mm-hmm. I don't know that people who are just abortion, but what people do want is legal, safe, and rare. And we got to continue to push that. We know that there's a push on the federal level and also on the state levels all over this country to take away that access for women. So voting rights, Automatic Voter Registration Act, let's do it. Why can't we do that? Less than 50, almost 50 million, about 46 million people in the presidential election did not even bother to come out to vote. We need to think about that and be diligent to figure out why are people just kind of opting out of the system. But let's do automatic voter registration. Why not? How about that?
Why not at birth? You know, when a Social Security number
yes.
is assigned, you just automatically put a clock on it.
That's right.
18 years out, you're registered to
that's
vote.
That's it. Why not?
There's no doubt when you're born, you're a citizen. I mean, you're right here.
Right. Why not do that?
Yeah.
And it increases voter participation because it takes down the barriers to voting. And anybody in the elected ministry, as I like to call it, and everybody doesn't see it as a ministry, but people who run for office for a living, think about that. Those who would want to suppress the vote, stop people from voting, or put up barriers to voting, it just makes no sense to me. And then we have environment, our climate change bill, criminal justice and immigration, and the tax on Wall Street, which is really the funding mechanism for an investment in college education. So there we are. That is our summer progress. Please go to ourrevolution.com and sign up. We need our citizen leaders to help push the people's platform. And that's what we're calling it.
There you go. The
people's platform.
This is great.
And hashtag
yes.
the people's platform.
There you go. And we need to get this into and embraced by
yes,
the Democratic Party.
Absolutely. What would be the excuse?
There you go.
Stand up for the platform.
We'll be right back with more of Nina Turner, head of president now of OurRevolution.com. We'll be right back. And you can tweet her, by the way, at Nina Turner.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be right back with Nina Turner, Senator Nina Turner. And welcome back. Nina Turner's still with us. And we got some calls for you.
Oh,
if you want to, talk to some people?
Yeah, I love to talk to the people.
Van in Lewis Center, Ohio, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Van, you're on the air with Nina Turner.
Hi, Van.
Hi, Nina. Geez, I miss you. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
it's really an honor. I'm forgetting what I was going to say. Oh, about the voting. I agree with everything that you say, and I wish the Democrats, progressives, you know, whoever's out there will really jump on the voting. Because if we, you know, if our voting don't count, if we can't get out there and vote, then it really doesn't matter about anything else, because we're going to always have the people that's in office stand in office. And also, you know, why don't everybody keep talking about Democrats need a, you know, a catchy theme or something like that, you know, so people really start, you know, feeling the need to follow them. Why don't you have a contest, you know, for people to, you know, email, write in, whatever it is, and have a contest who has the best theme, and then we can use that theme, you know, to get people, you know, worked up and riled up to you know, go out and vote and work for Democrats and campaigns and run for office. So, yeah,
wow.
that's basically what I wanted to say. And I appreciate you taking my call. And, oh, I just love you, Nina. And you too, Tom.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, man.
Thank you, Ben. Love you too. Wow.
Your thoughts
what
on all that?
Was incredible. You know, just really that whole contest idea is intriguing to me, but it really is about getting out among the people and hearing what they have to say about the issues that are most important to them. And absolutely, I agree with Van that the foundation of our republic, you and I were just talking about that, our representative democracy, is one woman, one man, one vote. And that is the greatest equalizer. It's not as sexy, so it doesn't get as much attention, but you and I know in that Shelby v. Holder, you know, when they gutted the Voting Rights Act, that sent a ripple. It's like it was like a domino. But since the election, you know, when President Obama was elected in that following year, legislatures all across this country, Republican dominated. I hate to say that. I'm not making it a partisan, but the facts are what they are. Republican led legislatures across this country attempted to enact, and some did enact, legislation that made it harder for people to vote all across this country. And it's just really wrong. So Van is absolutely right. The greatest equalizer that we have, the one vehicle that we have in this country that makes us all equal, that when we walk into the place where we vote or we sit at our kitchen table, is the ballot box. It is the greatest equalizer.
The back in 2008, when President Obama was elected, the Republicans, as in response to that, put together this plan to hyper gerrymander,
yes,
essentially, state after state after state. So you've got states, you know, Pennsylvania, Ohio, you've got, you know,
yes,
what, seven or eight Republicans, two or three.
Yes,
or 12 four
to four,
Democrats,
all the time.
Four.
So it doesn't matter.
It should be 50-50.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so any plans to work on that? I know President Obama, Eric Holder's working on this.
Yes, and I'm really glad that they are. I wish Democrats have done that a long time ago, but it's better
late than
never. Absolutely. Yeah, that is vitally important to us, along with there's an organization called American Promise, and they work a lot on the trying to get the 28th Amendment to the Constitution, which would be to undo Citizens United.
Right.
So in the same way that Van is talking about voting, I also believe that this overwhelming overflow, kind of suffocating impact of dollars, concentrated dollars in politics, is problematic.
We'll be right. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and in the studio with us, Nina Turner, former state senator, Senator Nina Turner, former state senator of Ohio, from Ohio, and now the president of Our Revolution. And let's pick up a few more phone calls here. We've got a bunch of people who want to talk to you. Jules in New York City, you're on the air with Nina Turner.
Yes. Yeah. Hi, Nina.
Hi, Jules.
There's really two questions. One is, what and how do you think you might be able to counterattack Chris Kobach's interstate cross-check? That's the first. And the second one is, how do you think that you might be able to challenge prison reform when you have someone like Sessions in power? I'll hang up and I'll take the call on the other side. Thank you.
Those are
big ones. Thank you, Jules. And she kind of faded out. Was she referring to the commission that?
Yeah,
President
Chris Kobach and the whole
is leading that commission.
So-called voter fraud.
Yeah, voter fraud. The only fraud is that commission.
Yeah.
Is the fraud. You know, I mean, even the Brennan Center did a report that says you are more likely to be struck by lightning than it is for somebody to commit in-person voter fraud. The beautiful thing about this, though, Jules, is that Republican and Democratic state secretaries of state have resisted you know, his call for all of this information, you know, social security numbers, whether somebody was in prison. I mean, just all kinds of craziness that they're requesting. So you have some secretaries of states who have resisted and said, I'm not giving it to you. And then you have others who have complied, but they have not complied totally. The way we push back on something like that is taking it to the streets for people to make it known to their elected officials that this is wrong and that, you know, they talk about voter fraud, but voter suppression is a crime, too. And that's really what they're trying to do, to gin up in the psyche of Americans that our system is not safe. And it is. And so we have to continue to push. And I do want to see Democrats do that. I said that ever since the Voting Rights Act had been gutted, we should have been on people's desks in the streets every single day or at least once a week to continue to keep that up to the forefront. So, but we need the people out there pushing against this. And then 2018 is coming. And in 2019 and 2020, and the best way to defeat someone like him is to make sure that we have different leaders in elected office. That is ultimately how we defeat them. And then Jules asked about the prison reform. Yes, AG Sessions is a threat. As we know, he's trying to roll back the gains that we have in this country. He wants to bring back war on drugs, even on marijuana. It makes no sense. It is criminal. It's inhumane. And it does a disservice to America. We need to be smart on crime. And it has that whole war had a negative, disproportionate impact on poor people, but particularly people of color, particularly African-American, Hispanic and Native American people, that we have 2.2 million people in prison today. We spend as a country $80 billion to keep people in prison. Let's keep the worst of the worst there, but let's try to rehabilitate, have some restorative justice for our sisters and brothers who have made a mistake and paid their time. But to have an attorney general like Jeff Sessions is very problematic. Again, the ballot box is the solution to all of this.
Amen. Jim in Nashville, Tennessee, you're on with Senator Nina Turner.
Hi, Senator Turner. You are clearly an inspiration to so many of us here in Tennessee.
Thank you, Jim.
And so I want to ask you to come to Tennessee.
I would love to do that. Yeah, well, I would love.
Well, awesome.
Email, I mean, just Nina Turner at R Revolution. Just yep. Email me.
All right.
Make it happen, Jim. Make it happen.
I'll email you.
Okay.
Thank you, Jim.
Jim, thanks for the call. Dawn in Ada, Ohio. Hey, Dawn, you're on the air with Senator Turner.
Hi, Nina.
Hi, Dawn.
Like I said, I'm from Ohio, too. In the past year, I'm coming up on my 14th surgery.
Mm.
And without the ACA and its benefits in the future, I probably am not going to live to be past, you know, maybe 55 or 60. I'm 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I had open heart surgery, and it was kind of a big surprise. I've paid insurance premiums my whole life. And without the ACA, I think I probably wouldn't have lived. So I think one of the things that we have to do is ensure that the ACA and some of its things that help people keep their insurance stays in check. But I think the only way we can do that is to make the insurance industry, pharmaceutical industry, healthcare industry, not for profit. No one seems to want to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason why they don't want to talk about it is because they're being funded by Big Pharma. They're being funded by the insurance industry, and they're being funded by everybody and their brother other than their constituents who actually vote for them.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dawn. We have just 1 minute until we run out of time here.
First of all, thank you, Dawn. I want to thank her for sharing her story, Tom. And there's so many people across the country just like her. We need to fix the ACA. There's no doubt that there are things wrong with it, but you don't just throw 22 million additional people off of insurance, because even with the ACA, we still have about 27 million people who are uninsured. So,
and I understand, I heard this morning that if they do the repeal without replace, which is what they're talking about now, we're talking 33, 34 million people being thrown off.
It's insanity.
This is, you know, it was Franklin Roosevelt who said this should be a right.
Absolutely. 1944, the Economic Bill of Rights. I want your listeners and viewers to look that up. He talked about jobs. He talked about housing. He talked about health care. Dr. Martin Luther King talked about these same things. He talked about how, you know, even with all of the travesties in this nation, he thought health care was one, or lack thereof, and I'm paraphrasing him on that. But my God, Tom, how heartless can you be?
It's important stuff.
Yeah.
Dawn's story is a great example. Thank you, Dawn, for that. Thank you, Senator Turner. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh my God,
today.
Our time is up already.
Our time is up. You've got a meeting you got to run to, I know. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
And Senator Nina Turner, president of Our Revolution, ourrevolution.com. You can tweet her at Nina Turner. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
You can support the Tom Hartman Program and see video of our entire three-hour show over at patreon.com/Tom Hartman. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And I do have a pile of news, but we kind of hit the bottom of the hour. We'll dig into all this stuff in the next hour because there's a bunch of callers on the line and whatnot. But it's worth noting, just in case you've been living in a foxhole or something, or just haven't noticed the news in the last 16, 18 hours, something like that. A couple of Republican senators said, nah, we're not going to go with this repeal and replace thing that Mitch McConnell was trying to sell, which blew that up. And so now McConnell is saying, well, let's just pull the plug. Right? Let's just pull the plug. So before Obamacare, we had 57 million uninsured Americans in the United States. Right now, we have around 22 million uninsured Americans in the United States. So with the Republicans' repeal and replace, we would have gone back up. We would have added another 22 million uninsured. So we would have gone back up to 44 million uninsured. But if you just repeal altogether, we're back to 57 million uninsured, nearly 60 million people. It's a massive. It's like you almost wonder, there's all this, fill in the blank country, right? Iran, Russia, Saudi Arabia, North Korea. The demon du jour in the American media, and the implicit assumption is that all these countries want to somehow take us down. Frankly, I don't think any of them want to take us down. Most of them just want to be left alone. But that's a whole other argument. But if it sure looks like if anybody's going to take us down, it's going to be the petro billionaires and the Republican Party that they own. It's amazing. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Hey, Charles, what's on your mind today? Thanks for listening to SiriusXM.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
I'm great.
Oh, great. Okay, the reason I'm calling today is because, you think about these elections as far as George Bush, Barack Obama, and now Trump, and you're saying, what is it that's been a quagmire for each of these two different parties with Barack Obama and Trump starting off with their, the administration, and we need to get away from health care. No matter what, we need, the first thing first has to be jobs. You have to put people to work. You have to start putting the income in their pockets and making them feel good about themselves, and then you can get to health care. And I think that's what's stopping these Republicans out. Even though they lied to us since the beginning of the ACA, they never had a secondary plan, and, they just...
Well, that's because the ACA was a Republican plan. That was what Mitt Romney did in Massachusetts. The Heritage Foundation, fine-tuned it. It was originally proposed by Richard Nixon in 72. So the Republican plan was Obamacare. And now the Republicans are stuck with, they got nothing. It's amazing.
That's the thing about it. They've been campaigning. It's just always been a lie. And what we need to also understand is this. We need to get away from the slave labor that this endless our system right now. It's in the economy. Mm. We need to build our wages because, like I called you before, and I told you since President Clinton, once we put all of Americans to work like he did, and we actually got a surplus in the budget instead of a deficit, you have companies that's taking their businesses elsewhere out of this country.
Right.
And until we introduce some type of entrepreneurship or small business program where regular Americans can have their chance at a dream of sole propriety or building their own corporations, we're not going to break the system that we're under right now. It's a slave labor mentality where they're just paying us poor wages where we have to fight and fend for everything. And by them doing so, you know, we can't pay attention to all the other crap that they're doing, you know, as far as legislation.
Yep.
As far as pitting the Republicans against Democrats, as far as the racial lines are concerned as well. You know, all of these things, it's just like a perfect storm. This is where the Republicans want you, on your heels, not knowing what's next. And this is not, you know, this isn't the way that you want, that you expect to live in this country, not a country as great, you know, as America. So we have the opportunities, but what we need to understand is there's just some structures that's built to stop us. And the first thing first, we need to fight for our minimum wage. Then we can fight for our health care, which is going to be single payer or, you know, Medicaid for all. We just can't involve insurance companies in this anymore because we end up dying no matter what. Someone dies.
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you, Charles. As always, you knocked it out of the park. You absolutely nailed it. And in fact, and thank you for the call, Charles. And to that point, I've got a piece that was published this morning on alternate.org. It's titled, "A 21st Century Form of Indentured Servitude Has Already Penetrated Deep into the American Heartland." The subtitle, "Corporations Want to Make Sure That Laborers Never Again Have the Power to Tell Big Business How to Treat Them." And it's, you know, it's about the indentured servitude that you were talking about. And, you know, I point out this type of labor system has been the dream of conservative corporatists, particularly since the Reagan Revolution kicked off a major federal war on the right of workers to organize for their own protection from corporate abuse. And, you know, it's not a secret. This is what they're up to. Fred in Rockford, Illinois. Hey, Fred, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. It seems to me part of the major problem on the Affordable Care is that there's too much speechifying about the shortcomings of the Affordable Care Act, and the even worse, removing of what Trump would be. I propose that we need to look at a positive thing to replace it, which specifically would be to model care on the Social Security. Everybody is in as soon as they're paying, you know, as far as they're making a job, you know, where they're paying into a pension. When they're young and not eating as much or not earning as much, they won't be paying as much.
Right. Well, that's what Medicare for All would be. We all pay Medicare taxes, you know, from your first job, whether, you know, if you're 16 years old, you're paying Medicare taxes. And you know, you can't cash into that until you're 65. If we made Medicare available to everybody, our Medicare taxes would go up slightly, but none of us would be having to pay for health insurance. So it's like, you know, and we would all save a fortune because, you know, we're spending twice as much as any other country in the world for our health care because largely because the health insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies are just ripping us off mercilessly. And if we had a single payer system, that Medicare system could negotiate drug prices with the pharmaceutical companies. And there would be, you know, no need to skim 20% off the top as profits for the company for stockholder dividends and you know, stock options for CEOs and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, Fred, you nailed it. Thank you. Omar in Herndon, Virginia. Hey, Omar, what's up?
Tom, thank you so much for taking my call. I have a newborn son, and I was trying to name him after you, Tom Harmon. My wife didn't agree. So,
oh, good. Well, thank you, Omar.
So I compromised with her. So we agreed that it will be his nickname, Tom Harmon.
Okay.
Well, what I wanted to say is really the Republican needs to understand that as long profit, you know, healthcare is driven by profit, we're never going to have a humane healthcare at all.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the perfect example. Obamacare is the closest to a human healthcare that we ever have. And the last thing I wanted to ask you, you know, Trump kind of hijacked the Democrat talking points online, i.e. Social Security and Medicare, and he didn't do nothing, you know. And if another Democrat come back and try to revive that message, do you think still will be valid or would it still resonate?
Which message? The Medicare for All?
Basically, what Donald Trump ran out last year. You know, basically, he ran on a Democratic platform.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Trump ran on a platform of, I'm not going to touch your Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. And by the way, the House just rolled out their budget with massive cuts to Social Security and Medicare, while the Senate is trying to slash Medicaid. So he said, I'm not going to cut your Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security. He lied. He said he was going to bring back jobs. He lied. He said he was going to make America first. He lied. It's just all rhetorical stuff. I mean, it's just talk. He said no more stupid foreign wars. He lied. Exactly. I mean, you know,
So if another Democrat kind of bring that message, will this theory thing will resonate with
people? Oh, yeah. People voted for him because they wanted those things that he promised. He's not going to deliver them. But people still want those things that he promised. Frankly, I think that's what people have been wanting for a long, long time. I believe that 2008 and 2012 were also change elections where people were hoping for radical and big change. It didn't happen for a variety of reasons. Probably the top reason among them being, you know, the Koch brothers and their network and their buddies doing everything they can to fight President Obama and the Democrats. But this country is ripe for not a shooting revolution, but for a political revolution. And I think the candidacy of Bernie Sanders, the existence of ourrevolution.com, and the great work that Nina Turner's doing proves it all. Omar, thank you. Thank you so much for the call, and thanks for your kind words. And say hi to your wife for me. I appreciate the call. We'll be right back, coming up on 15 Minutes Before the End.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with more of your calls. And just a reminder, a new article over on alternate.org, a 21st century form of indentured servitude. And welcome back. John in Chicago watching Free Speech TV. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, John. What's up?
Yeah, how you doing? I love your show. I listen to you every day. But there's something missing that I want to make that point. It's about the ACA. Mm-hmm. And I'm contending that everyone has a pre-existing condition, unless if you were born without an extension of your intestines, which is the umbilical cord.
In other words, unless you're even a virgin birth, I guess, would have an umbilical cord. So, yeah, here we are. So life is a pre-existing condition. It inevitably ends in death.
Yes. So when it's cut, you have a pre-existing condition.
Right.
For the rest of your life. So those insurance advocates, they should quit and start realizing that they have existing conditions themselves. So they should not try to deny anybody insurance based on pre-existing conditions. I think they still want to do that.
Yeah. I'm totally with you, John.
Totally. I take my comments
Okay. Well, John, you said it very well. You said it as well as I could. This whole idea that insurance companies should be able to discriminate against people based on pre-existing conditions is not based on the concept of insurance. I mean, you know, insurance is like a lot of people in and spread the risk around. And what they're trying to do is say, well, we're only going to insure part of America. And if you're not going to be profitable, we don't want to insure you at all. And that's, with car insurance, I can understand that because, you know, there may be drunk drivers out there, people who have bad driving records, people who are just lousy drivers, and the insurance companies need to protect themselves from those people. But we don't live or die by whether or not we can drive our car. It's essential to some people, and it would be incumbent upon them to learn how to drive and not get speeding tickets and not drink while driving and all those kind of things. But the comparison between car insurance and health insurance that conservatives make all the time is obscene. Car insurance is not a matter of life and death, and individual health insurance is. So very, very well said, John. Thank you very much for the call. Very well said. We don't have enough time to get another caller in here, so I just want to once again share with you this. The article that I wrote for Alternate today starts out, indentured servitude is back in a big way in the United States, and conservative corporatists want to make sure that labor never, ever again has the power to tell big business how to treat them. Idaho, for example, recently passed a law that recognizes and rigorously enforces non-compete agreements in employment contracts, which means that if you want to move to a different, more highly paid or better job, you can instead get wiped out financially by lawsuits and legal costs. You know, in a way, conservative corporatists are just completing the circle back to the founding of this country. Then I go back to how the British East India Company in Jamestown in 1610 was importing indentured servants from Europe and essentially treating them as if they were chattel slaves. And that's, and this is not to diminish the horrors of slavery, but the idea of servitude is absolutely, neo-feudalism is absolutely where we're at right now. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Herman here with you and Marie in Oak Creek, Colorado. Hey, Marie, what's on your mind today?
I love the fact that you used the word obscene. That was so right on. I would contend that what's going on right now is not just obscene. It's absolutely demonic. It is immoral. And it plays to absolutely all the worst aspects of the human condition. I want to go back to something that Nina Turner said a moment ago, and I thought it was so right on, too. She said that there is some indication that if the ACA is repealed, that there will be 33 million people who will have no health care.
Right.
So we need to start calling this what it actually is. I think Mitch McConnell has revealed their hand in saying, well, we'll just repeal the whole thing. This is a tax break for the ultra-rich. And this strips it away, takes away all of the facade that there's some kind of care for middle class and low income people. It strips away the facade.
Yeah. No, the Republican Party doesn't give a rat's ass about anybody who makes less than $1 million a year. Or probably $300,000 a year.
We need a constitutional amendment that says that health care and education can never be for profit. We need something written into the Constitution that solidifies that so they can come back and do it. Because healthcare and education are absolutely essential to a culture, to a society, to a nation.
Yep.
We are crumbling before our eyes. You had a caller on about, probably 2 months ago, who talked about the fact that we need to call it what it is. And this is back to Senator Turner's rebranding or language issue. We need to call this culling the herd. This is intentional human sacrifice. You and I had a conversation about this several months ago.
Yep.
About what constitutes human sacrifice. These people are considered expendable. Not these people, you and I, are considered expendable. We are only useful in so much to the extent that we increase the wealth of the wealthiest people. And once we don't do that anymore, we should die.
Well, what's happened, Marie, is that rural America, middle America has become a sacrifice zone. And the Republicans and the billionaire oligarchs who own them are trying to tell the people who live in the sacrifice zone that it's the Eastern Democratic elites, East and West Coast Democratic elites, who created this sacrifice zone, when in fact it was Republican policies from the get-go, all along. And you know, Democrats have always opposed these free trade deals. Obviously, it was so weird to watch Donald Trump yesterday giving a speech pitching, you know, how much he hates free trade, with Mike Pence standing behind him, smiling and applauding, while Mike Pence supported every single free trade deal, as did the majority of the Republican Party with every one of these free trade deals, and the majority of the Democratic Party with every one of these free trade deals opposed them, even though in the case of Clinton and Obama, their presidents were in favor of them. The party itself and all of the elected officials in the party who were, or not all of them, but the majority of them in the House and the Senate and in state houses all over the country, oppose those. So this is, you know, Trump ran as a Democrat, and on this issue, on trade, you know, he is. But you're absolutely right. With you know, stripping health care, you know, going back to 55 million people without health care, that is human sacrifice. I agree with you, Marie. Very well said. And I also agree with your suggestion that it should all be nonprofit. I grew up in Michigan in the 50s, 60s, and 70s and ran two companies there. And at that time, this was pre-Reagan, it was against the law for a hospital in Michigan to be for-profit. So all the hospitals were not nonprofits. It was against the law in Michigan for a health insurance company to be for-profit. So the major health insurance company in Michigan was Blue Cross Blue Shield, which was nonprofit. And I believe it was against the law to run for-profit schools. At least I didn't know of any. You know, it wasn't a thing then. And now it's like, you know, the Republicans and the billionaires are like, you know, how can we make money out of all the stuff that's necessary? Education, healthcare, things like this. And the process is they're devastating our country and they're destroying our people. Well said, Marie. Thank you so much for the call. Very well said. Brian in Encino, California. Hey, Brian, what's on your mind? Thanks for listening to SiriusXM.
Thanks. It just occurred to me that if you compare slavery versus capitalism, slavery, the business owner has to purchase the human outright and provide basic clothing, keep it relatively safe and healthy, feed it. With capitalism, the business owner merely rents a human for the bare minimum required by law, letting the human pick up the costs for everything else. So capitalism is held up as a sort of example to give more freedoms and such, but that's not true because most of our waking hours are spent either at work or getting ready for work, traveling to work, traveling home from work, leaving very little time for actual freedom, and then most people just don't have money to spend when they're done with it to enjoy that freedom, that few hours that they might have. So I'm not defending slavery. I'm just saying capitalism itself isn't some kind of panacea to like provide freedoms for everybody.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Right. And this is why I in my article for Alternate today, I didn't call it slavery. I called it indentured servitude because I don't want to minimize the horrors of slavery in the United States. It's like, you know, not calling something the Holocaust because you don't want to minimize what happened to Jews in Europe in the 40s, 30s and 40s. But this is from my article. I said, historically, indentured servants had their food, health care, housing, and clothing provided to them by their, quote, employers, end quote. Today's new serfs can hardly afford these basics of life. When you add in modern necessities like transportation, education, and childcare, the American labor landscape is looking more and more like old-fashioned servitude. And then I point out that, you know, Missouri just... You know, after St. Louis raised their minimum wage to $10, Missouri dropped the entire state back down to $7.70. It's like they really want it this way. Brian, well said. Thank you so much. Kurt in Federal Way, Washington, listening on KBCS. Kurt, we got a minute to the top of the hour. What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to speak briefly about the guy from Mexico yesterday that was the One for All, which I think would be 1% for All, the restaurant thing.
Okay. I'm not sure exactly.
Yeah, the guy that called up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the guy who's, yes, okay, the guy, yeah.
So I'd suggest starting that, this something locally. That's one way of doing it. You'll need a 501c3 to do it in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going to disperse it to? Which restaurants are you going to go to? There's a lot of feasibility studies that have to be done to figure out, is 1% going to cover administrative costs at all?
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot to that. Another option would be maybe like Starbucks. You know, if they were to take out something like that, that's another idea.
Yeah. Although, you know, a lot of these companies don't want to get overtly political. I mean, on some issues they will be. Starbucks, for example, has been very good on gay rights and things like that, on racial issues. But something that is perceived as being explicitly political, I think they'd be a little spooked about. But it's a good idea. It's an idea that's worth developing. And Kurt, your conversation with me right now, this is part of that process for all of us to try and figure out how to make this work. Thank you. Thank you for thinking about it. Thanks for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.